I'd like to call the meeting of the December Health Commission to order, and all members receive the minutes, and if there's any changes, please let us know, and if not, I'll ask for a motion to approve.
So moved.
A second? All in favor? Minutes are approved. Now for the public comment. This is the time when persons desiring to speak on issues other than those scheduled items that are within the scope of the interest of the Health Commission, please come up and you have 3 minutes. Thank you.
Honorable Board, Chairman, I'm Mary Giacoletti from San Simeon, and I appeared before this board in 2007, as I did at that time before the Board of Supervisors and the Air Pollution Control District Board. I appeared recently before the Air Pollution Control District Board December 1st of this year, basically pleading the same cause. We have a significant health hazard in this county, which is not recognized, or if it is recognized, it's ignored, and of course the latter would be the worst. I'm referring, of course, to wood smoke, which is referred to as the other secondhand smoke. The EPA has categorized wood smoke as 12 times more carcinogenic than cigarette smoke, and it remains biologically active 40 times longer. The main components of smoke is particulate matter, soot. It's referred to as black carbon, and NASA lists soot as their top priority pollutant. A 2009 University of Milan paper on particulate pollution said a professor concluded that it takes only 3 days for particulate matter to irrevocably alter DNA, causing increased rates of cancer. There is no other human activity, wood burning, that produces so much damaging pollution in which there is so little regulation governing such activities. San Luis Obispo County has the second highest rate of cancer in California. We have a higher rate of breast cancer than Los Angeles or Riverside. Our asthma rate is almost double that of Los Angeles. The risk for breast cancer increases by 73% upon exposure to wood smoke. There's a direct correlation between sudden heart syndrome, diabetes, stroke, an interesting Japanese study on stroke. The county is full of fireplaces that are old, outdated, dirty, highly polluting, and in violation of the 1993 Clean Air Act for particulate pollution and pollution in general. I would hope that this board would use some pressure or some persuasion and urge the Air Pollution Control District to take action, to take more action, because instead of this pollutant being reduced, it's being increased. We already have the existing fireplaces that are bad, and then there's the new trendy kind of wood burning in restaurants that's even worse, because there's no mitigation for that whatsoever. I have a handout, but unfortunately, and I have signatures from 2007 and from 2010, about 180 signatures. The list is reduced due primarily to my own lack of time. I could get far more signatures if I had more time. And I would like to submit this, some of the facts I have, for your consideration. Unfortunately, I have one set. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any further public comment? Okay, moving on, I would like to move into an overview of nonprofit organizations in San Luis Obispo and like to ask Barry Vanderkleen to come in. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Barry Vanderkellen, and I'm honored to be serving as the Executive Director of the San Luis Obispo County Community Foundation. I want to express my appreciation for your service to the people of the county as you serve on this commission. And also, I want to thank you for the opportunity to take a few minutes this evening to give you an overview of what's happening with the nonprofit community in San Luis Obispo. Nationwide, nonprofits represent about 10% of gross domestic product. And so it's not an insignificant activity. And in San Luis Obispo, there's a number of nonprofit organizations that exist because of the California Corporations Code. The same code that allows for-profits to exist allows for nonprofits to exist. So they are small businesses. Just like San Luis Obispo County's economic backbone are small businesses, we need to think about nonprofits as integral parts of the economic activity in the county. Now, I have a few slides for you, and I'm going to ask for the clicker. Thank you. So in the most recent information that we have is that in August of this year, we had 1,146 nonprofits characterized as 501c3 organizations. That's part of the tax code that allows organizations to receive donations and offer charitable benefits, the tax benefits to the donor. About 37% of the nonprofits had annual revenue less than $25,000. So you can see that many of them are very small and grassroots oriented. Off of the Form 990, the annual filing that must be done by organizations that have revenue of $25,000 or more, we see that there is revenue to nonprofits in this county of about $372 million. And about 20% of that revenue came from outside the county. Now, the Great Recession has had a dramatic impact on nonprofit organizations. And as we know, that the recession, according to the professional economists, started in December of 2007 and ended in June of 2009. But the effects linger. And the most recent projection is that we're really not going to be anywhere near normal, whatever the new normal is, till 2014. Perhaps we'll feel better about what's going on in 2012. We're a long way away, in other words, from really being settled or being able to look at this Great Recession in the rearview mirror. But since the beginning of the recession, revenue to nonprofit organizations in this county has been reduced by $22 million, or about 5.7%. The average revenue per organization is down about a little bit over 12%. During this time, because there are so many people in need, there are so many projects that are going unfunded, groups have come together to try to address those issues, and so we've actually had an increase in the number of nonprofits by nearly 8%. So we're seeing reduced revenue being spread by more amongst more organizations, and it means that nonprofits really are trying to do the best they can with what's available. And you can see that donors have changed their behavior during the recession. As one would expect, donors would go to change their giving behavior more towards the safety net than from other causes. And this slide shows that in five sectors of the nonprofit community, that the three donors have moved their money from three over towards two, away from arts and cultures and humanities, away from education, away from the environment, and putting more money into health and human services. We would expect that for a couple of reasons. One is they see neighbors in need and they want to help. And secondly, they want to make sure that the safety net is there if, heaven forbid, they need it themselves. I would like to point out that the decrease, these numbers are in absolute dollars. The percentage decrease in education is much less than in the percentage decrease in giving to the environmental causes. Decrease in education is actually 10.6%, whereas decrease in donations to environmental or revenue to environmental causes is 42%, a dramatic shift. This next slide is a national study that was done by the Nonprofit Research Collaborative, and it is the percentage of nonprofits that are reporting an increase in donations for the first 9 months of 2009 compared to the first 9 months of 2010, and you can see that in no category, this is by revenue size, in no category are more than half reporting an increase in donations this year compared to last year in the same time frame. We can also see that this is suggesting that donations are starting to be concentrated towards the larger organizations away from grassroots organizations, and that may be a function of the larger organizations having marketing, public relations, media relations, and development staff that can keep donors focused on a cause or a purpose. So in response to these challenges with revenue, study done by the Nonprofit Support Center, 30% of the nonprofits in San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara County have laid off staff, and then 35% did it again, or an additional 35% did it in 2010. 51%, about 50% have been involved in a hiring freeze. There's been a reduction in services. While people need more services, the resources have not been available to provide those services. And then the plans to expand those services to meet the increasing need has been challenged as well. Then finally, a large percentage of nonprofits have reduced their operating budgets. Again, because it's a resource issue. So what will allow nonprofits to recover from these challenges? Well, there's a few things. One is the government funding needs to be stabilized. If 20% of the revenue to local nonprofits are coming from outside the county, a large portion of that is from state and federal agencies. It's actually in the government's interest to outsource services to nonprofits. It's effective and efficient for government to be in partnership with nonprofit organizations. But we have unstable budgets at the statewide and national levels, and that's certainly impacting local nonprofits' ability to do their jobs. The high unemployment rate throughout the county and throughout the state, throughout the nation, is really causing an increase, this tension to rise between a demand for, or request for services and the ability to respond. We have a weakened charity workforce. We saw the number of organizations that have laid staff off or had a hiring freeze, which is causing fewer workers to do more work, and we are now moving into the era of when nonprofit employees are going to be facing burnout issues of doing so much with so little. And then volunteers are part of the solution, but the reality is that volunteers need to be recruited, need to be trained, need to be managed in order to have a fulfilling experience so that they'll persist in their volunteer work. They're doing it for free, and so there needs to be some sort of structure in place to make that a rewarding experience, or there'll be turnover amongst the volunteers, which is very costly. So volunteers are wonderful, but because of the recruitment, the training, and the supervision, they do cost money. And then consumer confidence must increase. Annual giving, those solicitations that you're receiving in the mail right now, annual giving is tied to consumer confidence. Major gifts for endowments and buildings are tied to the stock market. And consumer confidence continues to be depressed from where we were pre-recession days, although we are up from where we were a year ago at this time. Modest, but still positive. We're up 3 percentage points. So a quick commercial for the San Luis Obispo County Community Foundation. I'm going to turn this just a moment to a colleague, Leslie Dirks from the Nonprofit Support Center, because what I've tried to describe to you is that there are many challenges the nonprofit community is facing, but there are resources in the community that nonprofits can take advantage of, like the Nonprofit Support Center, to help them become more efficient and effective in their work. But the brief plug for the Community Foundation. We were formed in 1998 as a result of the Foundation for Community Design as a way to help improve the quality of life of all residents of the county. We do that by making grants and providing support services to nonprofits. We help people give money away strategically, and we build endowments to provide for future generations. At the end of 2009, we had assets of $28.1 million, and we had grants out into the community of more than $15 million. We think that we are really providing value to the community. Some of the services that we provide that other organizations provide some, but not all of these, are philanthropic planning. Like I said, we help people give money away strategically. We want them to have a meaningful legacy and to have impact in the community. So we help them with strategic philanthropy. We provide technical assistance to nonprofits, especially as it relates to major gifts and highly technical gifts. We can facilitate those for nonprofits. Endowment management, we have the infrastructure to do that rather than ask the nonprofits to build that financial infrastructure to do it themselves. We have fiscal partnerships. For instance, we're the fiscal partner for the collaborative conference in February dealing addressing issues of local poverty. And then we provide planned giving services to nonprofits. Two of the services I would just like to bring to your attention. One is the Real Estate Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. The Real Estate Foundation exists only to facilitate donations of real estate to local nonprofits. There's a lot of value in dirt in the real estate locally. Even though values are depressed, they're still up dramatically from where they were 10, 15 years ago. People can meet their personal financial planning and their philanthropic planning goals if they were to look at real estate differently. And real estate, the Real Estate Foundation there is there to help those conversations. And I'm very pleased to let you know that the Community Foundation just this fall received a license to offer charitable gift annuities. And we are making this available to all nonprofits. A charitable gift annuity is an annuity product, like a private annuity, with the remainder value going to the charity of the donor's choice rather than to the insurance company. This is a very powerful giving tool that provides income for life of the donor. And while this slide says that the remainder value goes to the Community Foundation, it's because we have the license, actually the donor can choose the charity of his or her choice. For as little as $10,000, the donor can have a meaningful impact on their personal financial planning and on their philanthropic planning. And so with that in mind, I'd like to turn this over to Leslie Dirks. And Leslie is the regional manager for the Nonprofit Support Center and coordinates the San Luis Obispo County office.
Good evening, Chairman and Board of Supervisors. Thank you for including me today. And thank you, Barry, for allowing me to speak to you and share a little bit about the Nonprofit Support Center. For those of you not familiar with the Nonprofit Support Center, also known as NSC, we are a nonprofit organization committed to helping other nonprofits learn better business practices so they can do their good work better. And we do that primarily by offering training, consulting, and resources to every nonprofit located in the San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties. And we do that because, like you, we believe that a vital nonprofit sector is critical to the overall health of our communities. But unfortunately, many nonprofits are dealing with very reduced resources. And so our ability to help them better leverage and manage those resources so they can offer the maximum quality and quantity of services to their clients really ultimately benefits us all. And one of the really wonderful attributes of our programs is that they're available to everyone. Be they nonprofit staff, board members, interested volunteers, community leaders, maybe someone in the community who would like to start their own nonprofit to address an issue. They may come into our centers or attend our classes to learn how to do that in the most efficient way possible. We offer four types of support, leadership, which I'll speak about in a little bit, training, consulting, and resource centers. And I want to just briefly walk you through each of those programs. There are slides that are included at your seats if you needed to follow along or would like to reference them later. In our training program, we offer workshops and roundtables along five basic nonprofit management tracks. Those are management planning, fund development, board of directors development, personal development, marketing, and media. We also have a consulting program because hiring a consultant is often a very daunting prospect for nonprofits. In the for-profit sector, it's considered an expectation, practically. Forgive me. So in our consulting program, our nonprofits, our for-profits, forgive me, are used to just hiring consultants, and nonprofits, that's not the case. So we act as an intermediary. We go into the organization, help assess what their need is, help identify what resources they have available for budgeting. Then we identify consultants who have the right expertise, and we negotiate a contract at a reduced nonprofit rate so that the nonprofit can be assured they'll get the service and expertise they need within the budget that they can afford. And then our resource centers are done, they're available in San Luis Obispo, Santa Maria, and Santa Barbara. And in our resource centers, we have periodicals and books, manuals available for self-study. We also own subscriptions to some of the larger prospect donor databases that are very costly and nonprofits couldn't otherwise afford on their own. So they're able to come into our centers and use them as members. And then lastly, the other area of support is in leadership. And what's really important is that we serve a role as an intermediary for our nonprofits. We're a trusted ally and friend where nonprofits can come and confide with us about their challenges. And we can then share that information with funders or groups such as yourself or other organizations to start a dialogue on how to address solutions. So just to reiterate what Barry already shared with you, here is some anecdotal information that's been shared with us. And essentially, Nonprofits really are struggling with reduced income and having to make staff changes, staff reductions. And at the same time, they still are having this increased demand for services, but now with reduced staff capacity, and then there's burnout and turnover, and it becomes a very vicious cycle. So to give you an idea of how we try to take a role of leadership in the community, I wanted to highlight three programs we've identified to address some of these issues for 2011. One is an executive director transition program that'll be run through our consulting program, whereby if an executive director leaves a nonprofit, we have consultants with nonprofit management experience where we'll place them in the organization to help keep the organization sustained and keep the programs afloat while another consultant works to find a long-term replacement. So then what usually is a very tumultuous experience becomes a much more seamless transition. We're also going to have a board of directors training series for the first time, and this is going to be designed specifically for members of board of directors. We're going to give them the skills they need to confidently lead their nonprofit organizations through this really challenging time. And lastly, the first time ever, we're going to have some stress management workshops, teaching nonprofit staff members how to take better care of themselves, giving them some real tangible skills they can use so that they can take care of their own stress, take care of themselves, and ultimately take care of our communities. And so in light of time and in deference to your busy schedule, I'll stop there and happy to answer questions. I invite you and anyone in our listening audience to visit our website at www.supportcenter.org to learn more. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions from the commissioners? Yes, Commissioner O'Dell.
Yeah, I was wondering, what is your funding? What is your, how do you get your funding? Yeah, what is your funding?
We have a combination resource revenue model where we generate resource through our membership. Nonprofits join as members and they receive discounts and classes and access to extra special resources. And the membership amount is defined on a sliding scale based on their operating budget. And then we also receive private donations. We're about half and half.
Any further questions? Yes, Commissioner Arnold.
Barry, thank you both for coming in to speak to us. On your portion, Barry, I thought you said that donations were up for health and human service needs, where the other categories had gone down.
Yes. The donors are shifting away from arts, from the environment, and from education more towards health and human services. Having said that, in those five categories, overall donations are down by about $7 million from where they were just before the recession started. So it's a bit of a mixed bag. The amount up does not offset the overall decrease.
Okay, I'm still not clear. Even the health and human services nonprofits, their amount of money coming in is going down also?
Overall, yes.
Yeah, I see.
And the entire, for all nonprofits in San Luis Obispo, the amount of revenue that is no longer here, that was here, we're down by $22 million.
Thank you.
Any further questions from the commissioners? I have one quick question. Can you help with marketing of some of the nonprofits? I mean, everyone markets individually, I assume. Is there any group marketing to help save some of the costs? Any kind of help you can do with that?
There is a consortium that was formed coming out of the Collaboration Summit that was co-sponsored by the United Way and the Community Foundation in the fall of 2008, right when things were really getting bleak. And what this consortium is it's self-formed of nonprofits that are interested in collaborative marketing. And the first initiative that they've undertaken is a series of videos that are being done for free. They've been able to arrange to do these videos for free for promotional. They're professionally done, but they're for promoting each of the nonprofits. And any nonprofit can participate in that as long as they attend the consortium meetings.
Okay, thank you. No further questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'd like to now like to move into a discussion about smart meters and health effects. And this was brought up a few meetings ago. We had had a discussion that we should actually, someone came and talked to us about smart meters, and we've slowly been educating ourselves on smart meters that are being rolled out right now by PG&E. And we've got Curtis Batson here, the Director of Environmental Health Services for the county, to give us a little bit more information on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Garina and members of the Health Commission. My name is Curtis Batson, and I am the Director of Environmental Health. And I'm here to discuss some of the concerns, public health concerns, from the use of smart meters. Smart meters are currently being installed throughout California, including San Luis Obispo County, by PG&E, to replace the existing analog electric meters. Smart meters use radio frequencies to report electrical usage in commercial and residential applications in an effort to increase the efficiency of the power grid, the electrical power grid. The use of radio frequencies to control electronic devices such as your television and transmit data such as wireless computer networks has grown exponentially in the past 10 years. Cell phones, security alarms, satellite television, computer networks, and remote control devices all use radio frequencies to communicate data and remotely operate electronic and mechanical equipment, like a garage door opener. Radio frequencies are part of the low-frequency electromagnetic spectrum of radiation. Magnetic fields are produced whenever you have a current flowing. Electromagnetic fields are present everywhere in our environment. There are natural sources, such as the Earth's gravity. There's also man-made sources. Even a human body creates electromagnetic fields. Everything from the electricity used in your home to radio waves used to transmit data or operate electronic and mechanical devices have an associated electromagnetic field. In the last decade, wireless technologies have been made possible through the use of radio frequencies. Electromagnetic fields are broken up into three categories. There are extremely low frequency electromagnetic fields, generally have frequencies up to about 300 hertz. Electrical appliances are an example of this type of that fit into this category. Household electricity is delivered to you at 60 hertz or 60 cycles per second. Other devices produce intermediate frequencies with frequencies from 300 hertz to 10 megahertz. Computer screens, security systems are examples of intermediate frequency fields. The third category is radio frequencies. These are the high radio frequencies of 10 megahertz to 300 gigahertz. I think a gigahertz is billion hertz, but I'm not sure of that. It's a lot. Mobile telephones, television, radio transmitters all produce radio frequency fields. These fields form the basis of telecommunications, as well as radio and television broadcasting all over the world. So the issue tonight, the installation of these smart meters have raised concerns about public health. In fact, they've raised a number of concerns. Public health, cost versus the benefit that we receive, invasion of privacy, the accuracy of the billing associated with these meters, and the potential for hacking into personal wireless networks that might have data regarding your personal finances and that sort of thing. In addition, concerns have been raised about interference with medical devices causing fires and explosions. Tonight, I'm going to limit my discussion to public health for obvious reasons. Everyone is exposed to electromagnetic fields, both at home and at work. The convenience of these wireless technologies, which utilize radio frequencies and their subsequent increased use, has brought about public health concerns and a sharp controversy within the scientific community. Health concerns that have been attributed to wireless technologies include, or from the smart meters, include headaches, sleep issues, heart problems, lack of concentration, loss of memory, fuzzy thinking, joint and muscle pain, increased blood sugar, increased cholesterol, increase in blood pressure, weight changes, and many more. Physicians, PhDs, and researchers, many see a clear correlation between the appearance of these diseases, maladies, and exposure to high-frequency or radio-frequency waves, radiation, excuse me. On the other hand, organizations such as the World Health Organization, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the President's Cancer Panel, and the Federal Communication Commission have concluded that current evidence shows no increased health risk due to radio frequency energy. These organizations, however, will be quick to add that further research is needed. In conclusion, the San Luis Obispo County Public Health Department is not really funded or not in a position to conduct its own independent studies. And it's not in a position to necessarily evaluate all the studies to determine their validity in the conclusions that they draw and present on the internet. However, one conclusion is very clear. Further research is needed. There's no question. Finally, after review of the literature, and there's a lot, believe me, there's a lot, I'm left with one question. Given the widespread exposure to all types of electromagnetic fields, including radio frequency fields, and notwithstanding the sharp controversy that exists in the scientific community, from a public health perspective, why is the focus on smart meters? I'm here to answer any questions, but I'm not an engineer.
Well, thank you. Any questions for the commissioners? Yes, Commissioner Riddell.
Just a little side. You were describing all the medical conditions, the result. That sounds like old age to me.
That's one explanation.
Any further comments? Yes.
Is my microphone here?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you were saying why the focus on smart meters. I just think that some of the exposure would be a choice. You know, like if you want to have a wireless network in your home or if you want to have a cell phone, but I don't think the smart meters have been presented to anyone as a choice. Mm-hmm. So if they feel that there might be health effects, they feel it's being imposed upon them, whereas some of the other technologies, I mean, you're saying it's everywhere, but I think if you really made an effort, you could limit how much you were actually exposed would be one idea.
You know, one of the principles is the distance from the magnetic fields greatly reduces your exposure to that. And so there is a distance factor as it relates to exposure and the potential effects that it might have. But I would say that most of the technologies that we are exposed to, it's part of our culture, it's part of our society, and there's not a whole lot of choice to get away from it. But you're right.
Is there any study that you came across that talks about like kind of a cumulative effect of all this, or?
You know, that was, as I read, and believe me, I did not exhaustively read all the studies that are on there. I would be reading for the rest of my career, I think. But the that is seems to be among the weaknesses in the studies, two things. The cumulative nature of our exposure seems to be getting more. And the other thing is the long-term, chronic nature of the exposure. I believe in the literature that I've read that that's the reasons why they feel more study is needed, because the technology is, in terms of cancer and the length of time cancer takes to develop, it's a new technology. It's been, you know, it's been around for a long time, obviously, but its use, the amount of its use, is growing very quickly. So we don't necessarily know now what that cumulative effect might be 30 years from now. You know, because our kids will have been exposed to it for a much longer period of time. There could be. They don't know. They believe further research. Because it does say current evidence. It doesn't say that there's absolutely no way. I would have hated to be around in 1920, 1930, saying there's no problem with cigarette smoke. You know. So I think we all have to be cognizant of this is science. It does not, all questions aren't answered in the beginning of this kind of thing. It takes time.
Thank you. Commissioner Kirk?
Yes, thank you for the presentation. I had a question regarding, you mentioned that the effects are reduced with distance from the device, a microwave or television set. Is there any provision, and I've also heard that sometimes microwaves can emit outside if they're broken or such.
You mean like your microwave oven?
Yes, a microwave oven, yes. Is there any provision for annual inspections or readings to see if an individual device might be leaking?
I know there are tools for doing that. I don't know that there is a governmental agency or they're tested when they're made, and I'm sure they're tested. Not all of them are tested, but sampling. But I don't know of any program other than maybe a voluntary program where you might get someone to be able to come in and test your microwave oven.
Oh, I didn't mean microwave.
These devices. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, and I don't know of that. I'd have to.
And there.
That they are.
From
FM radio. $10,000. Because it's we really
hey, we're
but for
appeared.
37. As must provide. Answers. Called. Of smart. Ding.
supervisor.
Things is
what it was. Any
opposition. These things.
Yes.
Adam.
I would like.
Both of you.
But with
and very much. Do you
could see.
Write letters.
And I and
really, really.
Are or the word are
them now. Social work. For any concern that that
side. I would but this
association. Health of our for the
TV.
Has been a due date.
Oh, no.
At our
Chair. Invite.